Chapter 43. It arrived by letter at 520 East Superior Street, a slim, unremarkable envelope addressed to Mr. Thomas Donohue. It looked innocent enough, but the news it held was anything but. Having run his tests, including X-rays on her jaw, Dr. Loeffler could now confirm it. Catherine Donohue was suffering from radium poisoning. Tom was devastated, remembered his niece, Mary. Just absolutely devastated. I don't know how the man functioned. After that, Tom himself said, I took care of Tommy when Catherine could not do so. Catherine herself never spoke publicly about how she felt. She probably prayed, as did many of her fellow sufferers. I firmly believe, wrote one of her friends, that prayers is all that brought me through. Yet just days after Catherine and Tom had received that letter from Chicago, Catherine's disease took even the solace of prayer away from her. On Wednesday, 25th of April, 1934, she hobbled the short distance to St. Columba, but found herself unable to kneel in church. Her hips had become so locked that she could no longer bend her legs to pray. For Catherine, so devout, it was profoundly distressing. At about the same time, Charlotte Purcell came home from hospital for the first time with her arm off. The doctors had confirmed radium was to blame for all of this, and Tom Donohue felt somebody should tell Radium Dial. Ottawa was a small place. Mr. and Mrs. Reed, the firm's superintendent and instructress, didn't attend St. Columba, but they were forever walking past it as they went to work. I saw him on the street, remembered Tom of running into Mr. Reed. I told him the women were in a bad way and that the doctors were finding it was from the material in the paints they were using. But Mr. Reed refused to admit any responsibility. He refused even after he saw Charlotte and her husband walking past the studio where they met him coming down the steps. Al was very angry at what had happened, but Mr. Reed brushed off everything they said. Dr. Loeffler tried to communicate with the firm too. Going above Mr. Reed's head, he telephoned Vice President Fordyce. I told him from the cases I had seen, I thought it would be wise to investigate all the other cases. Loeffler's phone call was not unexpected to Rufus Fordyce. After all, the firm had in its possession the results of the radioactivity tests of all the women at Radium Dial, taken back in 1928. The results that showed that, of the 67 girls tested that day, 34 were suspiciously or positively radioactive. 34 women, more than half the workforce. The company had said in its press statement at the time, nothing even approaching symptoms of radium poisoning has ever been found. That declaration was not some miscalculation caused by a misunderstanding of the data. The data was clear. Most of the employees were radioactive, a telltale sign of radium poisoning. But though the women's breath betrayed the truth, the company had deliberately and unashamedly lied. The company still had the women's names on its secret list of results, each numbered according to how radioactive she was. Ranked at number one for positivity, Margaret Looney, Mary Tonielli, Marie Rossiter. Very suspicious were the results of Catherine Wolfe and Helen Monk. For almost 6 years, Radium Dial had known the women were radioactive, yet the knowledge of the discoveries had been carefully concealed by the firm, who feared disruption of their business if the facts became known. The victims had not been informed of their condition, nor the cause, through fear of panic among the workers. It all meant that when Loeffler's call came in, Fordyce was ready. He refused to do anything.